From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for October 23rd, 2020. Remember baseball? Well, this weekend, the World Series continues with the Dodgers and the Rays in Dallas. And Sunday, the Packers travel to Houston to play the pride of Pewaukee, J.J. Watt, and the Texans. Okay, here we go. An L.A. rapper who bragged on YouTube that he was getting rich from unemployment fraud got arrested for unemployment fraud. Who didn't see that coming? At West Virginia University, a scientist remembered a few Twinkies he stashed away in 2012. As an experiment, he removed some of the mold from one of the eight-year-old Twinkies and took a bite. Well, it didn't kill him, but he could have saved himself a lot of stomach upset if he'd just read the expiration date, which was, "You should live so long." From Toronto, an 11-year-old boy stole a school bus, went for a joyride, flipped off the cops who were in hot pursuit. I'm sure we're going to hear more about this kid in the future. Even though trick-or-treat is mostly canceled, the hot costume for the year is the coronavirus. The good news is you won't have to share your candy while you're in quarantine. And finally, just to make us all feel bad, a 28-year-old California woman ran a sub-6-minute mile while 9 months pregnant. Heck, it takes me 6 minutes to cook a 2-minute egg. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Joel Dreesang, Chris Evers, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Yeah, thanks, Max. Shed a few nickels this week. NASDAQ lost 1.1%, down 123 points to close at 11,548. The broader markets, the S&P stock 500 lost 0.5%, shedding 18 points to close at 3,466. Broader markets, including dividends, still up nice 8.9% for the year. Dow Jones Industrial Average shed 0.9% this week, losing 270 points. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week 28,337. The Dow, including dividends, is up just 1.1% year to date. You know, Kyle, kind of a trading band that we're in. You know, we're doing pretty well for a while. The market basically treaded water this week. I'm kind of impressed that the market held its own, in spite of the fact that we didn't get the long-awaited stimulus bill through Congress. Pretty encouraging economic news, less than 800,000 first-time claims for unemployment insurance. And then you got to be impressed with the fact that existing home sales, highest number in 14 years. So that's a big number. It goes back years. And the housing market continues to be on the mend. Kyle, what are some of your thoughts these days?
You know, Bob, I think as we look at a lot of the economic data that's come out, we're seeing signs that parts of the economy are far stronger than what we would have anticipated at this point. And some of that is, simply the fact that we're not spending in other areas, and those are the areas of the economy that are still pretty weak. But some of it also is that I think, you know, things are a little bit better than what we had anticipated because we've been able to adapt to a lot of what is happening. And so you look at retail sales and the non-travel, non-restaurant areas of retail sales, all those look great. It continues to be hospitality that is the issue. And so, you know, I think as you look at the markets that have been trading in a pretty narrow band, the thing that you can count on is the fact that investors are seeing a path forward. They're seeing a path in which the economy can come back to a level where, you know, we expect it to be. And the one challenge is that, yeah, we've seen that in most areas, but there are a few pieces where consumers, spenders are going to need more courage. They're going to need more reason to want to take a leap into a plane. They're going to want to, you know, have to have some kind of either vaccine or better treatments before they're willing to go stay in a hotel, before they're willing to go out to eat. And so, you know, I think, yes, we're seeing signs of strength, and at the same time, we're seeing signs that strength is not even across the economy.
You know, Kyle, I read an interesting article the other day about states that either never closed down or had for a very short period of time compared to states that were much more stringent in their closings. And it's interesting to note that there hasn't been a huge difference in economic activity across all these various states, that as we've been saying now for months, people aren't going to go out and about until they feel safe. And it really doesn't matter what the politicians say, that people are unwilling to risk their lives, risk their health, and that of their immediate family by going out and about. And, you know, so you get the sense that now that we've had the initial rebound from the dark days, if you will, of March, April, and May, that the economy probably going to be heading into a period of leveling off until we get some kind of stimulus, which they now, I guess, say that could be after the election, not all that far away. But then, of course, to be in receipt of a vaccine, you know, it will, hopefully within the coming 12 months, that'll bring things quickly back to normal. Art, how do you see things these days?
About the same way you do, Bob. That's a great, great backdrop for my thoughts. This is deja vu all over again, as far as I'm concerned, this week. Reminds me of the movie Groundhog's Day. It's the same old. You know, we're talking about when is the pandemic going to end? And we're going to have pent-up demand. The market, I had a client this week ask, is the economy doing well this year? I thought that was an interesting question. The stock market's done well. We talked about how people are still out of work. We've got over 10 million people, I think, still around 10 million people still unemployed. And what investors have to be doing and what we're telling them on a regular basis is you have to have the right portfolio to get through just about anything. That's the way we build them. It's a sports utility vehicle. We're going to get through the snow, the ice, everything. And down the road, you look out a couple of years after we get the vaccine, imagine what the economy is going to be. And so those growth stocks, as we've discussed, are still in there, moving right along. But at some point, those value stocks, as we've discussed, are going to kick in. And I'm liking the way things are, you know, setting up. Everybody knows we need a stimulus package. We're going to get one at some point. The market has been very patient, as you guys indicated, despite the fact we haven't had that. We need a vaccine. And we've got to get this election over with. A lot of people are asking questions on a regular basis as to what happens if so-and-so wins or so-and-so wins. As we say on a regular basis, it doesn't make any difference who wins. We just want to get it over with, move forward, so we know with certainty what lies ahead. So get through these, you know, roadblocks. And I'm expecting, you know, quite a bit of prosperity down the road. And I think stocks are going to move higher in anticipation of that.
Chris, why don't you jump in with a few of your thoughts?
Sure. Well, you know, I want to just harp on again some of the points you made regarding the housing market this week. You know, this has been a continued thing over the last few weeks, over the last few months of strong data out of the housing market. And a lot of the commentary has been, you know, pointing to, well, delayed purchases from March and April that weren't made during, you know, the height of the pandemic, as well as people moving out of apartments in the city and just generally low interest rates. And all those things definitely have played an important role in this strong rebound in demand for housing. But we can't overlook the fact that there is a massive demographic change occurring as well. I mean, you have the millennial generation, that's 72 million U.S. individuals compared to 68 million baby boomers and 65 million Gen Xers. So you have a lot of millennials that are now reaching that peak home buying age, you know, that 26 to 36. And that leads me to believe that there is a strong support for the housing market beyond just, you know, this kind of short-term maybe pop due to delayed purchases or, you know, people moving out of the city. So I think that's something to watch going forward, but it's great to see great data coming out of the housing market.
Kyle, back to you here for a minute. You know, you look at the results of the third quarter, and I think it's pretty interesting to see finally that on average international stocks made just a tad more than U.S. stocks on average. Boy, we haven't seen that in a really long time. International stocks up 7.7 third quarter, general stock funds up 7.5. I mean, kind of a horse race, but I sure was encouraged to see that.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the reasons that international stocks have struggled, and it's been a long struggle talking since the financial crisis, is that, you know, the U.S. economically has been on a more solid foundation because our economy is based on consumer spending, because our economy is driven a lot by technology and less by manufacturing and less by some of the other areas that have struggled around the world. You know, that's made the U.S. a more attractive place. And in turn, it's strengthened the dollar relative to many foreign currencies. Now, many of our listeners know that a stronger dollar is a hurdle for foreign stocks because you got to buy those foreign currencies to buy the stocks. And then when you sell them, you turn around them and bring it back to dollars. A stronger dollar means you get fewer dollars coming back. And so that's a headwind to the returns of foreign stocks. And that dollar strength has been a long-running theme, but so far in 2020 and in the third quarter as well, you know, we've seen the dollar weaken. We've seen the dollar, you know, maybe not significantly weaken. We still think it's a little overvalued based on what we've seen longer term, but we've seen the dollar become a little bit weaker. We're seeing some tailwinds now to those foreign returns. And the other piece I think that's important to remember is that outside the U.S., there are lots of different opportunities that don't exist here in the U.S. You know, if you want exposure to the French energy market, you can't buy Wisconsin Energies to do that. You've got to buy a French energy company. And I think a lot of listeners would go, well, why do I want exposure to the French energy market? Yeah, okay, maybe that's not the specific example, but there's lots of those out there where U.S. companies just don't have a footprint you know, in other places of the world. Now, that said, there's a lot of big U.S. companies that you can get exposure to the non-U.S. with. But again, there's a lot of great companies out there. There's a lot of reasons to think that some of those companies are a bit undervalued right now. And if you add in this tailwind of a weakening dollar after a very long period of strong dollar, you know, I think it sets up nicely for what we saw in the third quarter to continue.
Well, no surprise that technology stocks led the market in the third quarter. Kind of surprised that number two is energy. You know, the phoenix rising from the ashes, if you will. But then you look down towards the bottom of the list to see that, you know, the worst performers were the bank stocks. You know, and there's no spread on money. Loan demand is weak. It's the ballywick, of course, of many value funds. So you want an easy explanation as to, you know, what's going on with value. You know, energy is the only sector that did halfway decent of any of the sectors in the deep value space.
You know, you look at energy names and really the energy market is entirely dependent upon the price of oil, or at least the energy sector is. And so with the price of oil stabilizing and even rising a little bit in the third quarter, it's no wonder that those energy stocks did as well as they did. And then the flip side of that is you look at financials and remember that most banks borrow short-term to lend long-term. And so the important thing to look at is what the difference is between what they can borrow at, right? What are those short-term rates versus what they can lend at? What are those long-term rates? And we saw rates in June get as high as they'd been on the long side in, you know, the really in a couple of months at least. And then for much of the third quarter, we saw rates come back down on the long end. And you saw the 10-year get back down to around 50 basis points. And all of a sudden, banks are looking like they've got some structural issues again because they can't get the kind of rates on their lending to cover their costs of borrowing. And so, you know, I think financials short-term have some structural issues in that net margin side of the business, but longer-term, I think there's some pretty attractive deals there. You've got some very attractive dividends on a lot of banks, and you've got banks that are far better capitalized than they were during the financial crisis, and so they're far more ready to weather the storm that is this interest issue. And then, you know, I think lastly, you look at the technology piece that you mentioned, it's no wonder that technology stocks have continued to rally as strong as they have. They may be the one piece of the market that's been pandemic proof. Now that's driven their valuations higher. It's made them maybe a less sure bet going forward. But I think they're going to be far more stable than what many people thought historically was the case for technology, right? That historically you bought those high growth tech names because you thought, okay, there's opportunity for growth, but there's going to be a lot of volatility along the way. And what we've seen actually is that those returns have been a little bit less volatile than what everyone was expecting. Again, because I think they were a little more pandemic proof than what many believed.
You know, and Kyle, as you well know, value tends to do pretty well in an environment where the economy is growing a little bit faster than normal. Boy, that sure smells like sometime later next year to me, that a lot of those deep value stocks will start popping. Folks, what we're talking about here is with growth as a given, you don't need to pay the higher PEs of growth stocks when you have an economy that's accelerating a little faster than normal, because you're getting growth just as a given. So you're able to normally make pretty good money on the less volatile names. Hey, Joel, let's bring you into the show. You had a handful of economic indicators and stats this week. Let's maybe work backwards. Index of leading economic indicators came out yesterday morning.
Yes, Bob, the conference board found that, things are still looking good. The economy is still growing, growing 3 months in a row, but that it's growing at a slower pace. In fact, they're sort of indicating that the economy is losing steam. The conference board is a group, a business research group, and they have these 10 indicators that they look at every month. They said that two things to be concerned about going forward are a weak labor market and a resurgence in the coronavirus, that actually could be, those could be factors that could risk that continued growth of the economy right now. And if we keep going backward, yesterday also we got the numbers on unemployment claims. And as you mentioned before, those keep going down, but they're still very high. Those are first time claims. So it's people who are just getting separated from their jobs and they're just first time applying for those benefits. And they're still, although they're down a lot from where they were in March and April, they're still, above where they were, what the record was before the pandemic. So the labor market is showing some signs that that's not going to recover real quickly. There was a survey done by the Wall Street Journal of economists a couple of weeks ago, and these economists are saying that it's probably not going to be until 2023 that we recover all 22 million of those jobs that we lost back in March.
It's a long time. Kyle, any last thoughts?
You know, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, but just keeping an eye on the 10-year treasury, I think, is a big deal right now. It tells us a lot about what the expectation is for the economy in the quarters and years ahead. And we had a big spike in the 10-year this week. We're up to the highest level we've had since June. And remember that the excitement in June was that cases seemed to be slowing down, that we felt like we had it the virus at least a little bit under control. And then again, through much of the third quarter, as the data got worse on new cases, as the data got worse on kind of the path that the economy was headed with the unemployment numbers and with some of the other pieces, you saw the 10-year treasury fall off the map. Now, again, we're still only at 84 basis points as of the close of the day today. So the 10-year treasury is not telling us that growth is about to spike to, back to old levels, but it is telling us that, the forecasts now are a little bit more rosy than they were in the past. And some of that could be expectations for some stimulus. Some of that could simply be expectations for the fact that 2021 is going to bring, easier comparisons year over year. But I think most importantly, a lot of that is just that investors are now understanding that consumers and businesses more broadly are finding ways to adapt, that the economy is going to be able to continue on even in the current state, because there's just many different ways to do things than what we ever imagined.
I think your comments on the 10-year treasury are right on the money. You know, a 12 basis point increase in the yield doesn't seem like a lot until you figure out that it's a 16% jump in the yield where we started the yield the week at 72 basis points on the 10-year. So whenever I see a yield jump 16% in five trading days, that's a big number. And the absolute number of 12 basis points would hardly raise an eyebrow until you do the math and see that, wow, that's a pretty good jump in the yield on a relative basis in a pretty short period of time. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.